Okay, so welcome everybody to Torah Motion's new series on Shemitah. We pick Shemitah because it's a Shemitah year. And of course, Shemitah relates to the number seven. So we're going to have a series. We're not sure how many weeks it'll be. Hopefully by Hanukkah we'll finish. And I want to begin this week's share. I should start from Bereshit. And we'll talk about Bereshit in chapter one and Bereshit because the number seven and chapter one and Bereshit definitely is connected. But I really want to start with Shemitah today. And because our previous series was all on Sefer Dvarim, and I have a lot of loose ends in Sefer Dvarim, I thought it was appropriate that the main focus of today's share will be Shemitah and Sefer Dvarim in this wider context of Shemitah as an introduction to Shemitah. And next week we'll go back and get to number seven. Instead of starting with seven, which I should, because we did Shemitah last, we're going to start with Shemitah in Dvarim and work backwards to get to the number seven. So let me share my screen and start my introduction. Here we go. Actually, I don't need my screen for this one. I want to talk about rhythm. I'll talk about rhythm and nature. What do I mean by that? I'm sure you noticed that because of nature, everyone lives in a 24-hour day. As we decided 24 hours, but we live sunrise, sunset. That affects human life, not just human life, all living things, every living creature, not only living animals, even, you know, birds in the sky, plants, all of the nature that God created in the first 7 days is all connected to a 24-hour day. Sunrise, sunset, and that pretty much controls our lives. That's a natural cycle. That's the cycle of the sun, of the earth turning around itself on the sun, the 24-hour day. There's another cycle that controls our lives, also almost all living things, and that's the cycle of the year. What we call a 365-day year. And that's caused by the seasons and has to do with how we go around how the earth goes around the sun. But those two cycles, the day and the year, are basically a function of the earth and the sun and the relationship between the earth and the sun, but primarily due to the sun. And they control our lives. What Chumash does, it takes that natural rhythm and imposes upon it or adds to it a new rhythm, which we call Shabbat. It was every 7 days, which is not a natural cycle. There's nothing inherent about the number seven in 7 days. Nothing happens every 7 days in nature. Maybe every month, every 28 or 29 days, you have a month. You watch the moon. It doesn't have that much of an effect on us like the sun does. But it makes sense that we use the moon for months. But more than any other celestial body, the sun has a tremendous effect on our lives. And therefore, don't be surprised that what Chumash does in the very beginning, it describes that all those powers of nature is really one. We'll talk about that next week with how the Chumash tells the story of creation, and hence the number seven. But one of the most important things that we do that relates to our day-to-day life is the cycle of Shabbat. And we build an external cycle, a non-natural cycle of every 7 days, having this idea of a week in Shabbat, a day of rest and working for 6 days a week. And that's going to put a rhythm in our lives. Everyone who keeps Shabbat understands that. Even if you don't keep Shabbat, anyone who follows the week that every other culture is pretty much adopted from us and the idea of a week, the week puts a rhythm into our day-to-day lives. So just like the daily cycle, the 24-hour day, has a rhythm of 7 days now that we've imposed upon it and relates it to God, in a very similar manner, we have a rhythm of 7 years. And I want to make sure that that's clear. There's two rhythms in nature which are control our lives more than anything else. That's the 24-hour day and the 365-day year. Those are natural cycles that control and basically control and set our lives up. And what Chumash does, it takes those cycles which are natural, imposes upon it an external cycle of 7 days of a week and dedicates it to God, 6 years and then the seventh year, Shemitah year. And in that way, at the very basic level, Shabbat and Shemitah are interrelated. We'll see how much even more as we go on. I just want to use that as an introduction to appreciate why the number seven, that's next week's share on the number seven in Sefer Bereshit, and how that relates to nature. There's one other idea of introduction, which has to do with the year cycle, and that's the agricultural year in the land of Israel, which we've talked about before. I want to make sure it's crystal clear. In Israel, it doesn't rain in the summer. Like between Pesach and Sukkot, it doesn't rain. Give it, take a day or two. But in general, it doesn't rain between April and September. It starts raining in September, October till March, maybe April a little bit. That's called the rainy season. Because of that, all the agriculture, the grain and the fruits, is one season a year. That's all there is. There's grain between April, May, and June, and that's it. We have our grain harvest, the beginning of the grain harvest. Chag Aviv is Pesach. The end of the grain harvest is going to be Shavuot. Then our fruits start growing, and the end of our fruit harvest is going to be Sukkot, Chag HaSif. We talked about that. Now, the Shemitah year clearly relates to our fruit harvest, to our grain harvest and our fruit harvest, as we'll see very soon. So this, you have to be aware of that, because that's going to affect our share today. You have to be aware of the agricultural cycle in Israel. We'll explain a lot of laws coming up. Now, again, so the rhythm and nature, we talked about the idea of a week and the idea of a year. And the number 7 will be our topic for next week, how Chumash is going to relate nature to God and the name it uses for God and all the beautiful details of chapter 7. Okay. Now, what we're going to do today is we're going to explain the logical connection between Shabbat and Shemitah. Because Shabbat, in fact, Shemitah later is called Shabbat as well. But Shabbat, the 7-day week, is totally logical. It makes a lot of sense. And we can use our understanding of Shabbat of every 7 days to understand Shemitah every 7 years, as we'll see. Now, what are the sources of Shemitah? So the most famous source of Shemitah is Parshat Bahar. Ask anybody, where are the laws of Shemitah? Everyone will tell you Parshat Bahar. To your surprise, if I'm not mistaken, the word Shemitah is not mentioned in Parshat Bahar. Is anyone aware of that? Just for the fun of it. Let me just check if anyone's listening. I hope you guys hear me. Let's check the chat. That's the source sheet. Okay, fine. That's just a recorded. That's fine. So we'll get off the chat. And was anyone aware, or maybe I'm wrong, but in Parshat Bahar, the word Shemitah is missing? Not missing. It doesn't say Shemitah. It talks about Shabbat. Every 7 years, it's B'Shaptar Shabbat Lashem. We're going to read. That's such a big topic. We're going to have a whole share on it, probably only in a couple of weeks from now. We're going to save that for the end. We'll see why. So the most famous source of Shemitah is Parshat Bahar. I'm assuming you're familiar with it. I just want to point out that the word Shemitah is not mentioned there. The most neglected source for Shemitah is the most important one, which we'll see a little bit today in Shemot 23. That'll deserve a whole share. And then the Parshat Mishpatim. The most misunderstood, I'm using that from the head of our previous series, is Shemitah in Devarim, called Shemitah Ksafim. Now, Shemitah, if there's something that relates to Jewish life outside the land of Israel, it would make sense it would be Shemitah Ksafim, because the Shemitah of the land is clearly only in the land of Israel. That's for sure. You know, that Shemitah of land, Parshat Bahar, is referring to the land of Israel, not, you know, the whole globe. But Shemitah Ksafim, every 7 years, the loan's being annulled. The assumption is, why would that have anything to do with the land of Israel? That should be a general law that every 7 years, loans are annulled. Of course, we couldn't run business that way. And everyone knows that we get out of that with Prusbel. Today, I'll try to understand a little bit better how Hillel came to that conclusion about Prusbel. But our focus today is going to be on Devarim chapter 15. And the idea what we call Shemitah Ksafim, the annulment of loans every 7 years, when that happens and why that happens. And if there's any connection between Shemitah Ksafim and Shemitah Karka, is it, other than the word Shemitah and the fact they're both 7 year cycles, is a 7 year agricultural cycle that every 7 years I stop working the land. And every 7 years I know my loans, other than the word Shemitah and the fact they're every 7 years and they coincide, is there any connection between them? So the goal of today's share is to understand that connection. And so we're going to start now with the most neglected. Okay, we'll do it quickly. We want to find the introduction, the first time Shemitah is mentioned. And remember from our series in Devarim, the laws in Sefer Devarim come together with the Ten Commandments. So there's no doubt Parsha Mishpatim, which was given the day of Matan Torah, the Parsha Mishpatim from chapters 21 to 23, or the end of chapter 20, comes right after the Ten Commandments. In Pshat, on the same day or the next day, we get the laws of Parsha Mishpatim. The laws of Sefer Devarim we saw were given on the first 40 days. So they come now. When the laws of Bahar were given, we have to see. Because is Parshat Bahar was given in Har Sinai? Was it given on the first 40 days? Was it given after Chet Ha'Egel? That's really complicated. We're going to see a big argument about that. But I'm saving that for later. I want to start today. The first time we have the word Shemitah in Chumash, I think that's the most logical thing to do, to see what context Shemitah has brought. And I want to show you how it's going to enhance our opening point about the rhythm of the week and the year. Let's do a quick mute real fast. Oh, you got it, Maxine? Okay. It's a quick mute. Okay, that's good. You're on top of things. I'm going to share the source sheet one more time for those who need. As long as I got my chat open. Okay. I don't think I have to do it anymore. And whoever's on is online. Okay. We're good. Now, so what we're going to do first now, I think the logical thing to do, let's find the first time Shemitah is mentioned. And if you follow our series all the time, when you study Chumash, you don't only study the content, you study the context. And therefore, when we look at the first time Shemitah is mentioned, we have to see what the context is. We're going to dedicate a whole share to that later on. But for now, I simply want to point out that Parshat Mishpatim, or chapters 21 to 23 in Sefer Shemot, which follows right after the Ten Commandments, is a set of laws. It's a sampling of Jewish law. Three chapters that follow the Ten Commandments. They're given on the same day as the Ten Commandments. They're a sort of a sampling of Jewish law. Most of it is between man and his fellow man. The first big section is called the Zikin, or damages or responsibility between, damages caused by one person to another, either physical damage by assault or property damage or negligence and things like that. And then the last section is about ethical behavior. So the last section of ethical behavior, and this is going to be the sort of the grand finale of those three chapters. Remember, those three chapters began with laws about building a mizbeach, and then goes right to how do you treat your servant, and then goes into financial laws and damages, and taking responsibility and financial obligations, and then ends with laws of ethics and how to treat less fortunate people. And the grand finale is going to be what's called Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage holidays, and goes back to between God and man. So I'm just going to read the ending in the context of Shemitah. Pay attention. V'shochad lo tikach. It's forbidden to take bribes. Okay. Why? Because the shochad, because bribery is going to make people blind. Of course, not physically blind, but blind to ethics and things like that, and cause people to say things that aren't so, to pervert what's right and wrong. That's unfortunately human nature. So that's a beautiful summary of the ethical section. And then the closing summary, V'ger lo tuchatz, don't oppress a stranger, even though it's really easy. And you of all people, batem yedatem et nefesh akir, you of all people, don't oppress a stranger, because you are strangers in Egypt. Now, notice that ends between man and his fellow man. And then we have a transition to Shemitah. But listen to the wording. V'sheish shanim tizra'at zarecha, artecha, v'saptet kvota. Just like in the Ten Commandments. 6 days you work, the seventh day you rest. 6 years you plant your field, you plant your land, means you make you develop your agriculture, and you gather, it's tua, means you can make a living. Vashvit, in the seventh year, kishmetenu untashta. How to translate that is very interesting. What do you mean on the seventh year? What do? I'm going to use the word let go. I'll explain why, because I think Americans understand that idea a little better. Letting go, it's not, some people say it means to do hefker. Hefker meaning, I think Rashi brings that down. It belongs to everybody. Let's see what they say here in the English. You shall, oh, here. But the seventh year, you shall let it rest and lie fallow. Okay. I don't think tishmetena means to rest. We'll see in a minute. And nutashta might be to abandon. I'm going to try and explain a different idea of the word shemitah as we go on. But for now, I'm going to explain the seventh year, let go. We'll see what that means in a minute. Now, what do you do with the produce? The produce of the seventh year, you let go of it. And who's going to eat it? Let the poor people eat it. Why poor people? Because they probably don't have land. So give it to them. Then listen carefully. Whatever the poor people don't eat, you can't collect. Let the animals eat it. I'm pointing this out because I think the main thing is not supporting the poor. We have other laws to support the poor and the needy. The seventh year is more about you than about the poor people. I want to make this point clear because I think it's important. I thought we have that. We're going to get that little announcement in the middle. Just ignore it. But it's good to remember to follow all laws. Okay. I'm in a place where I don't need a mask. It's okay. So again.
But it's not muted and it's interfering with Rabbi Lisa.
No, that's me.
Sorry.
Yeah. No. I'll explain. I'm at the airport. I have a flight to Israel in 2 hours. So I'm in a place where they make announcements like every 10 minutes, every 15, 20 minutes.
Okay, sorry. So,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for your help.
Okay.
COVID-19.
That's a good message anyhow for everybody. Now, let's go back to our topic. So what am I saying about Shemitah? It's not that I have the laws of Shemitah to make sure the poor people have what to eat. We have other laws for that. There's a need for the individual to let go. 1 year, you need not to make a living. Not make it, you have to stay alive. But 1 year, you have to hold back your inclination to gather wealth. What do people do that are safe? Agricultural people gather their crops, they sell them. That's how you build wealth. Once every 7 years, let go. I'll give you an example. And that's why I'm going to use this example right from here. Human beings are very creative. Once every 7 days, we stop creativity. We let go. We have this natural inclination to do work. At least some people do. You want to work. You want to be creative. You want to use your mind. You want to use your hands. You want to do things. And you're supposed to work 6 days a week. Once every 7 days, I stop my creativity. I hold back from creativity. And to remember, we'll see what to do with our creativity. We'll talk about that next week. In a similar manner, human beings have this tendency, which is healthy, to make a living, to become prosperous, to amass wealth, to build up capital. And you need to do that. The question is what you do with your capital, what you do with your prosperity. But once every 7 years, hold back for a minute, let go, and just live a life without, just get that out of your head, I have to make money that year. Just let go for a year and let things, like, just let the economy just take a rest, similar to Shabbat. And that explains why the purpose here is not just to feed the poor, but rather it's that you can't take, you have to let go. And who's going to eat the fruit? Let poor people eat it. And anything else, let the animals eat it. But the main thing is you can't take it. Because it was just for the poor. But the poor got their share, then you can take the rest. No, you can't take that either. Okay? And can't tassel lechamachin, that's just for your grain, also for your vineyard and for your olives. Those are the main crops of the land of Israel. Three of the Shevamini. Okay? Now, right next to that, and that was my analogy, and that was my introduction. Just like every 6 years you work, in the seventh year, you leave the land fallow. You don't make a, you don't gather. You don't gather your capital. Sheshet yamim tasem asecha. 6 days you work. That's just like Shabbat. Uviyom ha-shvit yishbot. On the seventh day, you rest. Why? Leman yanuach shorcha v'chamracha. Binafesh b'matecha bagir. Once every 7 weeks, everyone has to rest. And if your businesses are working, so you might take a rest, but your workers need a day of rest as well. And therefore, everyone just close down all your businesses. The economy has to close down once every 7 days, and everyone needs a day of rest. What they call it in Teaneck, they call them blue laws. But basically, 1 day a week, everything's closed down. But notice how in its first introduction, Chumash has linkage between Shvit, Shemitah, and Shabbat. And that's why it began with the theme of rhythm of nature. It's the rhythm of the 24-hour day and the rhythm of the 365 year and the seasons. And they both are similar themes. And that's why there's 7 years. Again, why the number seven? Our topic next week. Okay. Now, then God says, everything I told you, we summarize all the laws of Parsha Mishpatim. So this is the transition between man and man and between God and man, because everything up until now in Parsha Mishpatim was primarily between man and man, how we treat our fellow man and responsibilities of society. And then we have laws between God and man, which is Shemitah, but with an element of between man and his fellow man, because it's also for the poor and the less fortunate. And then we go, in light of that, three times a year, but again, the agricultural times of the year, what do? You have the three agricultural holidays in the spring, Chag Aviv, in the Katzir, and Yassif. And here we have the Shlosh V'Galim for the first time, but they're presented as agricultural holidays, not as historical holidays. It mentions you have your Chag Aviv the same time you came out of Egypt, but the Shlosh V'Galim that are presented here, and again, we have to dedicate a full share to that later on, is that the Shlosh V'Galim here are agricultural times of the year, and we'll talk about later how that relates to Shemitah. Now, so what we notice is how this relates to two reasons for Shabbat. Notice the two reasons for Shabbat in Sefer Shemot, the reason for Shabbat is to remember God created, but in Sefer Dvarim, the reason is to remember that your workers also need a day of rest. So the reason for Shabbat in the Ten Commandments in Devarim is not unique to Devarim, it's also in Parshat Mishpatim. And therefore, don't be surprised that just like Shabbat has a reason in Shemot and a reason in Devarim in the Ten Commandments, but the reason that's in Devarim is already found in Parshat Mishpatim. So it's not a contradiction between Deuteronomy and Shemot. It's a different aspect of Shabbat that both are developed in Shemot, and we'll see how they're going to develop now in Sefer Devarim. So that's our first source, the word Shemitah. Now, I'm going to bring now two other cases where we have the word Shemitah in Tanakh. support what I mean by letting go. And both stories aren't such happy stories. What's the first one? When David becomes king in chapter 5 in Sefer Shmuel, the first thing he wants to do, he wants to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. He's all excited about it, and you know, they have the whole procession. But the first time he tries to bring it, they're bringing the Aron to Yerushalayim, and they're bringing it in a wagon. Everyone knows the story. I'll pick with Pasek Vav. Vayavol at Gor Nachon, they played to a certain threshing floor. Vayishlach Uzzah at Aron Haluim, and something happened. We'll see in a minute what happened. Uzzah, the guy in charge of the wagon, in charge of running it, what happened? He went to hold it. Vayachos, where he held the Aron, and of course, you know, that he died because of that. But why did he hold it? Ki shamtu habakar. What happened? Look at the English translation. The oxen stumbled. I want to claim they slipped. But I think it's the same idea. But something happened. The oxen, they stumbled on the way. Or they slipped. It means animals are walking, pulling a cart. They slipped on something. And when you slip on something, the wagon turns or leans to the side. Uzzah tries to catch the Aron. And what happened, happened. But you see the word shamtu can relate to slipping or like falling. But I want to, again, I want to bring the idea of letting go. The best example is from Yzedo. Everyone knows, you've heard of Yzedo. We name our trash cans after Yzedo. You know, she's the daughter of the king of Sidon, and she's the one who brings idol worship in the time of Ahav. She's the bad influence that brings, you know, foreign culture or Western culture into Israel. Now the Baal worship and Asherah worship to the northern kingdom. So Yehu is a big general who leads the revolt inspired by Elisha. And Yehu comes to the gate, you know, of Israel, where Ahav, where the house of Ahav had their palace. It's now Yehoram's son. In the meantime, he killed Yehoram and all the people, all the supporters of the house of Ahav. But Tomer Shalom Zimri, so what does she say? She welcomes the new general because she thinks she's going to remain queen. So she welcomes him and thinks, you know, maybe the king's gone, but I'm still the queen. And he compares, she compares Yehu to Zimri, another general who did a coup d'etat and became king. And of course, Yehu's not so happy about it because his whole revolt is against Avodat Baal, as we'll see. So what happened? He looks up to the window and he sees, asks the soldiers, who's with me? And he looks up the window, he sees Yzedel and two or three of his officers take a look there. And what's he command his men, his special unit? Bayimer Shimtuha. She's looking out the window from maybe the second or third floor of the palace. So he tells his men, go up there. And Shimtuha means, it could be push out the window. I think it means let her fall. The English translation is throw her down. But that's not the word for throwing down. It more says, in the window, just let her fall. Bayishmutuha. And it makes it look like an accident even. She falls down from the window. And then her blood, you know, goes along the wall of the house. Remember, if they threw her, she'd be farther out. It wouldn't hit the wall. When you just let her drop, she'll hit the side of the wall as she goes down. And her blood is splattered over the wall. And then the horses come down and they trample under her. They trample her and she's gone. Later, they only find her bones. Again, I brought two examples of Shemitah, the verb Shemitah, which means like letting go or letting fall. Letting loose. We'll see in a minute. I want to support that now from chapter 15. And now we're going to go to our study. Now we can make this smaller. We're going to go now to Shemitah and Sefer Dvarim. Now, there's two reasons I picked this topic. One is because we've been doing, our previous classes were on Sefer Dvarim. So I want to have a transition from Dvarim to our topic of 7. But more so, especially if you're in Chutz Laaretz, the laning for Shmini Atzeret was from, we read this on Shmini Atzeret, so it should be fresh in our memories, from about a week ago. And we read this laning often also on the second day of Shavuot and also on the last day of Pesach if it comes out on Shabbat. What are we told to do? Let's take a look. Remember we did Sefer Devarim, there's a set of laws that begin in chapter 12. Through chapter 26, the practical laws of how to become a nation serving God. And their laws for the nation are, we talked about our national center, the Hamakom HaShiv Har Hashem. We talked about our judicial system. We talked about our Supreme Court. We talked about our king, things like that. So when we're getting all the, and we follow the Ten Commandments pretty much. So after we get the theme of God's name, Hashem Hashem, we slowly move to the idea of Shabbat and cycles of seven. So first we say what? In chapter 14, we take 10% of our produce every year and bring it and eat it in Yerushalayim. That's Maaser Rishon. Then every 3 years, we say Shalosh Shanim, instead of bringing it to Yerushalayim and eating it there, we give it to the poor people. It's called Maaser Ani. I'm assuming you remember that. But there's a cycle of every 3 years. It's year one, year two, you take 10% of your produce and eat it in Jerusalem. Years three and six, you take that same produce and you give it to the poor. Then that sets a 6-year cycle. And then in the seventh year of that cycle, it says, Miket Sheva Shanim Taseh Shemitah. Now I'm going to play teacher for a minute. And everyone has to think for a minute here. Maybe we'll play on the chat. Okay. Every 7 years, do Shemitah. This is the Devar Shemitah. So I hope you're with me. There's two ways to understand this. Is Miket Sheva Shem Taseh Shemitah an introduction to what follows? Because let me read the next line. Zed Devar Shemitah, this is the word or the, we'll talk about the word Devar in a minute. The statement of Shemitah, Shemot. We'll see what that means again. Let go, or people say, what's it say here? Release. Koba Mashe Yodo, anyone who's a lender to the borrower, let go of that commitment that he has to pay you. Okay. Lo Yigoset Re'il Betachi. You can't, you know, demand the money from your friend or from your brother. Why? Because God called out Shemitah, or because the people called out Shemitah for God. Because of the Shemitah, you have to know your loans. Got that? So this is what we call Shemitah Ksafim from now on. Every 7 years, we know our loans. When in the Shemitah year, the beginning or the end, we'll see the Machloket later on. That's not important for today. Sure, now the idea is every 7 years, you will know your loans. Now, here's my question. Pasuk Aleph, listen carefully. Every 7 years do Shemitah. Is that the introduction to Pasuk Bet? No, it's Pasuk Aleph introducing Pasuk Bet. And what's this referring to? Every 7 years do Shemitah. And what is Shemitah? Shemitah Ksafim. Got it? Or is this a reference to Shemitah in Parshat Mishpatim, what we just read? Is Sefer Dvarim telling us every 7 years keep Shemitah like it mentioned in Sefer Dvarim? Like it mentioned in Sefer Shemot and Parshat Mishpatim. And because of Shemitah Karka, because every 7 years you stop your produce, you stop your agriculture, therefore also annul your loans? Or is it a totally new topic? Okay, so let's take a vote, I hope. Let's see if anyone wants to use the chat. What I want you to do in the chat, I'll get answer A. It means this is an introduction. The only topic here is Shemitah Ksafim, is annulling loans, and Pasuk Aleph introduces Pasuk Bet. That's option A. Option B is, this is a reference to the laws of Shemitah in Parshat Mishpatim. Every 7 years, do Shemitah. It can't be Bahar, because Bahar doesn't say Shemitah. It's a different law. But it could be Parshat Mishpatim. That's why I mentioned it first. So every 7 years, do Shemitah. Is this referring to Parshat Mishpatim? And because of the laws of Mishpatim, therefore I have Pasuk Bet. That's B. You understand the two possibilities? I'll say them one more time. A, this is an introduction. And the whole topic here is Shemitah Ksafim. B, it's a reference to the loss of Shemitah Karka of every 7 years not working your land. And because of that, I have this. That's B. So don't tell me what you think. Tell me how you always understood it, or when you read it a week ago in Shul. Okay, let's take a look at the chat and see what good people are answering. Okay. Everyone likes A's. You say, oh my gosh, a lot of A's. Okay, we got option. Oh, very good. A. Okay. I was hoping for that. A, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 A's and 4 B's so far. Okay. Okay, because that goes back to the previous pasuk. Okay. It could be. It's a good word. Okay, I think we have a lot of votes. Another B. Okay, B's are catching up a little bit. People started thinking a little bit. We start off with a lot of A's, and little by little, the B's are creeping in. Okay, so let's go over and try to explain what I'm doing. Okay, let me explain A again. That was the majority opinion. And that's the way most people understand it. Don't feel bad. A is the classic way of understanding it. Every 7 years you do Shemitah. And what is a lot of Shemitah? Every 7 years you will know your loans. Which makes a lot of sense. And the Bible critics love that, because what they say, the Dvarim is a different source, remember, a different tradition. So the Dvarim has laws that that we never saw before because it's a different tradition, and it contradicts Shmot because in Shmot, Shemitah is about land, and Torah is about money, and you know, and someone puts them all together. What I want to show you, I want to prove to you now that it's option B. Why? This has to be a reference to the laws of Shemitah of land, and because of the law of Shemitah of land, we have the law of Shemitah of money. And let me stop my share now because I need to explain this. I think it's real simple, but it's the key point of the share I want to get across. And we need all the introductions to understand this. There's a difference between giving a loan and giving tzedakah. If someone's poor, you give him handouts. You give him money. He needs help. You feed him. When a bank gives a loan or when a person gives a loan, someone can be in need, you know, and doesn't have money, needs to feed his family. So you give him tzedakah. You give him a present, and it's his. But when you're talking to a person who's wealthy or has capital, but sometimes he's short on money. So when a bank lends money to somebody, hope I got my economy right, the assumption is that I can lend them money because they'll pay me back. Based on what would they pay me back? Because in the future, I'll give you an example. Let's say you have a student going to medical school. Okay? So it pays for the bank to give him a school loan, because if he's going to medical school, right now we can't afford, you know, to pay himself, but he'll become a doctor. And most doctors make a good living, at least, you know, depending on, don't talk about different laws and governments and things like that. But assuming that a doctor will make, or anyone going to college, they'll give a student loan because the assumption is they'll become a productive person, he'll pay back later. A person has an investment that's held up, a CD, like a certificate deposit that comes through in 3 years. So I'll take a loan now because I can't pay back because the money's tied up, but I'll get it later on. I'm putting up an apartment building. So it's going to take 2 years to build the apartment building. I'll give a loan. You know, I'll give the person a loan now with the assumption in 3 years you can start collecting rent to pay me back. Now, in ancient times, if you're living in an agricultural society, our income is based on our produce. And our main income is Chag HaKatzir in June and Chag HaSif in September, in August, September, maybe October. That's when we bring in our grain because our grain can be stored. What happens if I bring in my fruit, you know, in the summer, and comes December, January, Hanukkah time, Tu B'Shvat, whatever it is, and I run out of food? There's only one crop of grain a year and crop of fruit. I'm out of food. So our forefathers went down to Egypt, remember? When they run out of food. But we can't all go down to Egypt. Yeah. What did we need to do? Other people store food. Or maybe we import it. You need money. So if I have money, I have food, and my neighbor doesn't have food, but you know, he's got a lot of land, I'll lend him money with what assumption? That comes harvest time, he can pay me back. So I'll lend money in January or February. He'll pay me back in April, May, June, or even August, September. It's the logic of the economy. Not that? So that's regular loans. Now, and that's why people took loans as opposed to giving tzedakah, because you're lending money, but the assumption you get it back, and you have what's called security. Well, collateral, I think they call that in fancy. You'll see soon why I'm not in business. Now, what happens in the Shemitah year? I hope everyone understands the economy. I think it makes sense. In a Shemitah year, you can't pay back a loan. Why? Because you have nothing to pay back when. Even if you own land, right? You can't pay back your loan because during Shemitah, the only thing you can do is what? Is you can eat a day at a time. You can eat whatever produce is out there. You can't collect. You can eat by Tahar Sibusi. You're supposed to eat the produce of the land, but you can't make new investments. You can't collect the fruit and sell it. You can't store it. Whatever's there, you can eat, and that's it. But there's no hoarding, no collecting. There's no asifa. We'll see learn how later it's going to relate to the law of Hakel. We'll see later on. But the main law during Shemitah is that even though produce continues to grow, the grain grows anyhow. And you know, we don't plant new fields, but whatever was there last year continues to grow. The fruits of the trees continue to grow. You know, we just leave them alone, they grow. What we can't do, we can't collect it. And therefore, there's no way a farmer can pay back his loan in a Shemitah year. Make sense? And therefore, what's the Torah say? Now let's go back to the Pesukim. It makes perfect sense now, doesn't it? Let's take a look. Let's go back and share our screen. And now we understand why I said B. And where are we? Here we go. Every 7 years, do Shemitah, as it says in where? In Sefer in Parshat Mishpatim in Sefer Shemot. Therefore, this is the derivative of Shemitah. Zeh Devar Shemitah. What do we say? Shemot, let go what? Koba Meshe Yodom. Anyone who let money, the lender, has to let go, right? And the borrower, and you can't demand the money from the borrower. No, let's say someone owes you money. You have to let, you can't collect the loan during the Shemitah year, okay? And don't demand your money. Why? Because this was declared a Shemitah year. And there's no way the people, the economy can't keep Shemitah if people demand their loans. You'll force people to break the Shemitah laws. Meaning, when someone owes money to somebody else, we know this from society. If you owe money and the debt collector's coming and he's going to threaten you, he'll beat you up, he'll beat your kids, he'll threaten you, whatever. So whatever he might do, he'll shame you in show, whatever he'll do. And you'll do anything to cover your loan. People don't want to owe money to other people, especially the loan sharks. It's dangerous. And if people demanded their money back, if people let money and demanded it back during the Shemitah year, there's no way people would keep Shemitah. So because the Shemitah year was cut out to God, it's forbidden to collect loan that year. Therefore, there's a direct connection between Shemitah of the land and Shemitah of Karkaot. Now, what you should be asking, good, tell me what the good question comes up now. If that's the case, what should happen to the loan? Oh, by the way, one other point I want to make is that the person needing the money, wait, listen, I let money, I need money to feed my family. That's not a problem in the Shemitah year either, because everyone has food to eat during the Shemitah year. Right? There's food for everybody on the ground. Everyone's equal. So I can't say I need my money because I have to feed my family, because there is food for everybody. You know, everyone's equal in the Shemitah year. There's a moratorium, basically, on all debt collection. But someone asked me a question. What would that say about the loan in the future? Let's take a look at the chat. Okay. But who will end Shemitah year? Okay. I'll get to the, I'll get to the chat in a minute. Okay. Let me see what I saw in the chat for a minute. If I remember, what iPad asked was, of course you could save up from year six. That's what you're lending. But if someone took a loan in year seven, right? Or year seven, I mean, or year, the end of year six, he didn't have anything in year six saved up. We're talking about people who didn't have enough money in year six. So they can't pay back in year seven. And because of laws of Shemitah, I can't allow people who lent money to collect their money. I have to put a moratorium on all collection in year seven. No. So what should be the conclusion now about year eight? Let's take a look. Let's see. Okay. Exactly. What Ruth is saying. Why not pay back in year eight? Why annul the loan? I understand a moratorium on the loan for 1 year. I understand holding back. Remember I said holding back or letting go? For 1 year, you can't collect the money. But how about in year eight, in year nine? Once the economy picks up again, why can't I collect the loan 2 years later? I can't connect it next year. Yeah? Someone want to say something?
Yeah, you can't connect. You can't collect it because it takes a year at least to grow, and then another year to get the profit.
Okay, so I'm saying you can't collect in year eight. You can't collect in the Shemitah year, but the next year when you have, so it takes 2 years or 3 years.
Why can't I collect it? I always thought the loan is completely forgiven.
Now that's the halachic understanding, but there's a shita called the Yireim. Yireim is Tamid of Rabbeinu Tam, and
Rabbi, it's a shita, mentioned. You say Shemitah is to let go, so you have to let it go. You have to, that's it.
Okay, so when you look...
Wouldn't the idea be to start from a clean slate?
Okay, like Yom Kippur.
Now, make an even playing field.
Oh, so you're onto something, Debbie. That's the Rambam who connects Shemitah Safin to Yovel. He says, just like we let go of our land, we let go of our money. You follow? It's a clean slate. But that applies to Yovel. And that's why the Rambam's going to say... Shemitah Ksafim is linked to Yovel and not to Shemitah. That gets really complicated beyond to something big. And that's why the Rambam goes in that direction. But we're not there yet. That's too complicated for today. I want to get the most basic thing. But the Yireim, if you heard of him, from Balei Tosfot, what's he say? He claims that the debt, in fact, the halacha says so, if you repay your loan, it's a mitzvah. Right? If you owe money, it's a mitzvah to pay your money back. The debt is not annulled. You still owe the money. It's just the person, the lender can't collect it. Got it? But it says, Amachzir, Chobato, Mishmita, It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. We'll see the sources in later weeks. Now you understand the logic? It makes sense. So it's, you owe money. It's a loan. And we're not talking about staka. And we'll prove it for the sukkim that follow in Sefer Dvarim. We're not talking about giving staka. We're talking about a loan. And it says, you give a loan on Shemitah year, I mean, the year before Shemitah. You can't collect loans during Shemitah year because it will cause people not to keep Shemitah. But you still owe the money, but you have to let go. You can't collect. You know, it's the lender has to let go. I can't collect my debt. But a person should feel responsible to pay his debts back. Therefore, he should pay back his money if he can. No, Shemitah year, he can't. But the year after, he starts making money. I gave you an example from Israel. What did Israel do during Corona? They gave out money to, like, hotels were all closed. They gave out money to the hotels. Any business that was closed because of Corona, they gave out money, right? So Yisroel Hotel, the hotel company, made a fortune this summer. They got tons of money from the government, but they also made lots of money because, you know, no one left and made, they made a big money, and they paid a big dividend to their investors. So the government gave them millions of shekel, and then, so they made a big profit, and then they gave a dividend because they had a good year. So there was a big sum. What do you mean? Before you give money to your investors, give money back to the government who kept you alive. I won't go into what happened in the end. No. But then you get into economics, which I don't understand. But you understand the logic behind it? Why should someone not pay back a loan just because of the Shemitah year? If 2 years later he has the money to pay back, why shouldn't he pay back? So the halacha is you should pay back, but the lender can't demand it. And that's the main thing. You can't demand the Shemitah year. You don't demand the next year either. But it's a mitzvah to return your loan. That's what I say. Now comes what everyone, something mentioned, but let me say one other thing in the chat. Hope that was clear. Where are we? Yeah. Everyone should start with the clean skate. Why doesn't the debtor repay the loan under a different classification if he's paying it as a mitzvah? Okay. That's it. What Jennifer is saying, he should pay back his loan, but the person who he owes money to can't demand it. But morally, he should. Now, there's no halachic framework for that other than lifnei mishurat hadin, or like, you should pay back. Morally, you should pay back, but the person lending the money can't demand it. Also, I think lending for 1 year makes sense. Lending 2 years, that's like way too in the future. Don't think that way. Now, how do we get around this law? Remember, Hillel made Prusbel. Now, I want to send the logic of Prusbel. The whole reason for this law, the whole reason for law is that to help those in need. And what will happen is, if you would keep this law strictly, right, and in all loans, if all loans would be a loan, no one would lend money at all. It's like, I'll give you an example. I'm showing off how bad I understand economy. But here's how I misunderstand it. I'll probably get in trouble for this. It's what's called minimum wage. So all social groups, right, say you have to pay minimum wage. You can't pay workers peanuts, right? So you have to have law minimum wage. But what happens if you have minimum wage, right? It could be minimum wage is doing more damage for workers than help, because if you have too high minimum wage, tell me if I got this right, investors won't start businesses because they can't make it. You won't make a profit because it costs too much money. Labor is too expensive. And then if labor is too expensive, I can't make a profit. And therefore, I'm not going to open up a factory. And therefore, I won't have jobs for anybody. So if you make minimum wage too high, you're not going to have, you won't have any jobs. You won't have any jobs, zero wage instead of minimum wage. Do I have it right? And that's why some people are against minimum wage. So what do you do in government? So you have to have minimum wage, but you have to minimize minimum wage. And you have to find the right balance between minimum wage and enough money for people to make a profit. But sometimes you might legislate minimum wage to help the poor people, but at the same time, you have to, let me pause the 1 second. I'll do a quick pause for a second. Pause for a second. Did I pause the recording just now? Second. I'll stop the share for a second. Okay, now we're back to recording. Sorry about that. So let me go back to what I was saying. Sometimes you make a law for the sake of the poor, but sometimes the law is counterproductive. So what did Hillel do? Hillel instituted Prusbel because he's keeping the spirit of the law, the idea behind the law. And because once you're not living in an agricultural society, so all these laws aren't going to it makes sense if 90% of the people are in agriculture, but with 10% people are in agriculture, everyone else is in business. It's not fair to the economy to only some people making, only some people not being a building thing. Okay. Okay. So again, I don't want to open up a whole, I'm not opening up a class on economics. And there's a reason, again, there's a reason why I'm not in economics, but I think that was my understanding of minimum wage. I was using that as an example of how you have to balance. Okay. Okay. So let me just finish up now. Oh, let me now see the Parshanim. And then we'll go back to the Psukim. Let's look at the Parshanim. What does it mean to let go? Oh, let me go back and share my screen again. Okay, I'll mix up here. No, what did I do? I'm still online. Okay. Share screen. Wait, let me just check the chat real fast because I missed something. Okay, sometimes for me that's no problem. Okay, the rest are about minimum wage. We'll see them in a minute. We'll go back and look at this in a minute. Let me just finish the psukim. Share screen. And here we go. No. Here we go. Oh, what am I doing? Stop the share. Share screen. And, oh, here we go. I need... No. What happened to my files? One second. I'll unshare my screen. Stop. Wait a second. I closed the screen that was open with the source sheet. Now I have to open it back up. There we go. Should meet the class. Give me a second. Okay. Now we'll go back to Zoom class. Share screen. No. Okay. And is it here? Why can't I find it? No, that's not good. Share screen. Let me close this up. Give me a second. I lost something. I can't. Here, here's the class. That's good. Now, share screen. Here we are. Okay. Now we're good. Now we're up. Okay. So again, now everyone, let's go back to chapter 15. Every 7 years, do Shemitah, like it says in Parshat Mishpatim, we said. And now this is because of that law of Shemitah in Mishpatim. This is Devar HaShemitah. Now notice, we're in Sefer Devarim. Zeh Devar Shetziva Hashem. A Devar can be a law. Got it? Remember, in Sefer Devarim, don't be surprised that a new law, or a new law, is called Devar HaShemitah. Shemot Koba Meshe Yadol. Why? Because we call it Shemitah for God. And because it's Shemitah, in Parshat Mishpatim, of Shemitah Karkaot, Shemitah of land, therefore I have Shemitah of money. Okay. Now, look at the next line, which makes perfect sense now. It's not anything racist at all. Etanachritigos, who can he collect money from? To someone not keeping Shemitah, you can collect your loan, right? So the Nachri doesn't have to keep Shemitah, he can work the land. And therefore, there's no reason why you can't collect the loan from a Nachri. But someone who's your brethren, who also has to keep Shemitah, him you have to let go, you have to release, okay? Okay. Now the next topic we'll give a whole share to, but it's a lot of fun. Ephes. What Ephes means, like on the other hand, or albeit, as they say, there shouldn't be a poor person. We'll go back. Now you see the connection to Parshat Mishpatim. Remember, Bechul Avinei Amecha and Parshat Mishpatim? You can't miss a connection between the Evyon is a giveaway. The Pasuk Aleph is referring to Parshat Mishpatim. Okay? Why? Because God will bless your land if you keep these laws. We'll see in a minute. On the condition, if you keep the laws that God's commanding you. Now the question is, if you're keeping the laws of Shemitah or keeping the laws of Shabbat or, you know, of the laws. We'll talk about it soon. Okay. So he's saying there won't be poor people if you keep the laws of Shemitah. I'll just give a quick introduction to this. Is Sefer Devarim saying if you, by keeping the laws of Shemitah, that will prevent poor people? Or, if you keep the laws of Shemitah, there won't be poor people. Now it's the question of what's going to stop people from being poor, keeping Shemitah or by keeping Shemitah that's the way you solve the problem. We'll have a whole share and discuss that more in detail. Okay. Now, Pasuk Zayin, I'm just going to read quickly. We'll do a whole share on this later on. But, Pasuk Zayin is a new parshiyah. Should there be an Evyon? Remember the famous question? First Chumash says, we said in Pasuk Hey, what's God say? Ephes, I'm sorry, Pasuk Dalet. Ephes, there shouldn't be an Epion. There shouldn't be anyone poor in your country. And then, in the next paragraph, the next parsha, what's it say? When there is a poor person. Okay? So make up your mind. Will there be Avonim? Won't be there Avonim? We have to dedicate a whole shir to that. Okay? Now, I'll explain why we have to dedicate a shir to it. Because what's God say to do? Open your hand to them. Now, that's going to explain what we say in Tfilah LeDavid and Ashrei about Potech et Yadecha. Again, I'm only mentioning it, but we have to dedicate a whole shir to it because it's something really important. Now comes our Shemitah topic, which only makes sense if we explain it the way we did. I'm sorry. Hisham Elecha. Go back to Pasuk Tet. Be careful. Pen Yechad Barim Levavcha B'Del Limor. You might have this bad thought in your heart saying, Kavash Shanta Sheva Shanta Shemitah. The Shemitah year is coming up. And it'll be bad in your eyes for the poor person, and you won't give him, and he'll call to you, and you'll be saying, you don't know what he needs. Okay? Instead, give him, don't detain la, give him, and don't be bad in your eyes, because that's how my God will bless you. So, what do you mean? Why give a loan? If you give a loan, if Shemitah annuls a loan totally, then it's not a loan. Like, why do you think it makes sense? You know, you won't lend money because it's a bad loan. No. It's a loan that you can't collect for a year. It's not a loan that you, no, Epshad, I'm saying, you're not going to want to give a loan because you won't get your money back. So I'm saying, relax for a year, you'll get it 2 years later, you'll get it a year or two later, whatever it is. But the law, just call, if it wasn't a loan, just call it tzedakah. We're talking about lending money and Shemitah stopping the loan. But if the fear is the laws of Shemitah are going to stop people from lending money, so then they basically call it tzedakah. But if it's still considered a loan, it's still lend money, so you don't get back this year, you get back maybe a couple years later. Again, we don't have time to do that in detail. We're going to do this in 2 or 3 weeks from now when we go back to this, when we talk about Potech et Yadecha. Okay, but give him instead. I just want to see the this idea of Kilo Echta Abiyom Mikir Ba'aretz. Again, let me just summarize because this requires a whole shir, but I'm explaining why it needs a whole shir because what's God saying, Potech Tiflach Yadcha La'achicha Le'anecha, bottom line, you have to open up your hand. I want to use that later on to explain why we say Tila Davi 3 times a day. Remember, we say Tila Davi 3 times a day to get to an Olam Haba kind of thing, the famous Gemara. We say 3 times a day. In my opinion, that whole Gemara, both on these Psukim, requires a whole class. But quickly, I want to show the Parshanim. What's Sforno say? Remember Ashir? Listen, remember, plus A or B, you know, do Shemitah every 7 years, Zedvar Shemitah? This is what Sforno says. Zedvar Shemitah. He's quoting Parshat Mishpatim, right? He's saying the Shemitah that this is referring to relates to the Shemitah in the word. Now he's saying, we'll see in a minute, he might not be saying what we're saying, but he's relating to it. Okay? He's saying Pasuk Aleph, let's go back. Sforno is saying the Pasuk Aleph is an introduction to Pasuk Bet. Yeah, remember what we talked about? He says A is an introduction to B, to Aleph to Pasuk Bet. But he's saying this is referring to Parshat Mishpatim. But he's saying worse. He's saying different. He's not saying what we're saying. He's saying this is referring to Parshat Mishpatim. That's what we said. But he's saying the Parshat Mishpatim is referring to Shemitah Kesafim. In other words, he realizes because of the word Shemitah that this law is connected to Parshat Mishpatim. But because of these psukim, he's saying that these psukim tell us that the Dvarim, that Mishpatim was talking about Shemitah Kesafim and not Shemitah Karkot, which doesn't make sense when you read Parshat Mishpatim. That's why everyone else disagrees with Sforno. And we'll see Ramban in a minute. So that was Sforno. Okay? Why Ki Krash Shemitah Hashem? God said it's the Shemitah year. That's the question. Who's calling out Shemitah? Did we call it Shemitah? Or does God declare Shemitah? I'll just give quickly the big machloket, which will be in detail. During the Shemitah year, is everything hefker because God said so? Or does God command every landowner to mafkir? Meaning, does the owner of the land have to mafkir? No, how do you say mafkir in English? You have to, what's the word for mafkir in English? When you say anyone can take whatever they want from my field.
Make it hefker.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. What's the word in English for making hefker? I hope you understand. It's called the mafkir, making hefker. Meaning,
Relinquish ownership.
Okay, that's better. Okay. Meaning, during a Shemitah year, can I go to my neighbor's yard and take, whether he says so, whether he can, whether he says I'm allowed to or not? Or does my neighbor have to relinquish, have to mafkir still, then I can take? Otherwise, I'm stealing. Now, if during Shemitah, does God declare it belongs to everybody, and the owner doesn't have a say in the matter? Or is God commanding the owner, everyone has to relinquish? It's a great machloket rishonim. It's also machloket. We're machmir. But, you know, it's a big machloket. So we're machmir. You can't take from someone's house unless he's mafkir. But it's a big machloket. You know, right to that goes all back to the sources. We'll discuss that. And that's why Kikra Shemitah Lashem. Why? Because God called out Shemitah, or we called out Shemitah on behalf of God? You know, did we call everyone has to let go of their field, or did God decide, it's like Hefker Beitin Hefker, did God decide that we don't own our field that year, the produce that year? Or did God command us, do we have to let go of our field, or did God take it away from us? Well, it's an awesome machloket. Again, that's for Shemitah in detail. Now, let's look at Ramban. B'kei Sheva Shanim, what somebody says. I'm sorry. First, he's going to argue with Ibn Ezra about when Shemitah begins. That's too complicated for now. But B'kei Sheva Shemitah, yeah, we have 2 minutes. Hanachon Beinai, Shizera Oshnat Tasheva, Atzma B'shnaseh Ota Shemitah, B'chish B'katzir, Vosh Amar B'shmot Chav Gemo. He's saying B, like we said. That what? That... it's not referring to what's coming up. It's not an introduction to Shemitah Ksafim. It's a reference to Shemitah Karkot, but it is Shemitah Karkot, not like Sforno. Sforno is saying that Mishpatim was talking about Shemitah Ksafim. He's saying, no, this is not about Shemitah Karkot. Okay? Shemitah Shetishbot Kederach Lasot Yom Shabbat. Okay? So he's saying that's referring to that. And then he goes on, he has a discussion, when does Shemitah begin? In the beginning of the year or the end of the year? So Ebenezer is going to say, Shemitah begins in the beginning, like now Shemitah began already. Shemitah Ksafim. And Ramban's going to say, no, Shemitah Ksafim is at the end of the year. And that's how we hold. Everyone except Ebenezer. Again, that's too complicated for today. We have our work. We have a lot to do to understand all this stuff. The main thing I wanted to do today was explain the agriculture of the land of Israel and the logic between Shemitah Karkaot to Shemitah Ksafim. Right? The way we're explaining it is that Shemitah Ksafim is inherently related to Shemitah Karkot. It's not two separate laws. Because of Shemitah Karka, I have to have Shemitah Ksafim. Because otherwise we couldn't keep Shemitah. That's the main point, in case you didn't understand what we did. But my point was is that usually it's understood as two separate laws. They're both called Shemitah, and they're both every 7 years, and they coincide with each other, but they have nothing to do with each other, and therefore Shemitah Ksafim might apply in the land outside the land of Israel. The way I tried to explain it is that Shemitah Ksafim in Sefer Dvarim is a direct result of Shemitah Karka from Parshat Mishpatim. Once you understand the agricultural cycle of the year and the logic behind it. Now, so in the chat, let me work backwards now. I can open up the chat and answer the questions. Next week, we're going to go back to the basics. Then where's the number 7 is coming from? Hopefully, I'll be back at home in Mir Tzashem next week and I'll have a normal computer. And we won't have announcements in the background. Okay, they'll work backwards. Now, with the new month, the court only has a few days to declare the new month. No. I'm not sure what has to do with Rosh Chodesh. Okay, I'll have to get the iPad later on. Okay, ownerless with Shemitah. Okay, the minimum wage being raised. Okay, I'm going to get into... we'll deal with minimum wage another time. So whether Shemitah Ksafim applies outside land business, Machloket Rishonim. So that's a big question, whether it's the Oraita or the Rabbanan. Almost most posting votes the Rabbanan, it's not the Oraita. Basically, what we're saying, it can't be the Oraita, it can only be the Rabbanan. And it's a big Machloket. But these are, again, more reasons why it's okay outside land of Israel to use Bruce Ball, because it's only the Rabbanan anyhow. Okay? The Jezebel story is chapter 9 of Malachim Bet. It was asked. I should have put that on the source sheet. And let's go back up now in this chat. I can't see. I'm used to a normal mouse. Okay. You can't demand a loan 2 years later. You can't demand a loan in halacha. That's for sure. But it's always a mitzvah to repay the loan. Okay. Oh my gosh. Oh wait. Okay. Now we get back. Can the farmer sell his land? I'm just checking the Skype. I'm checking the chat real fast. Okay. Why doesn't the debtor repay the loan under a different classification? Okay, we talked about that a little bit. Okay, that's right. If what Asher is saying is that we should use a different verb. If you cancel the loan, it wouldn't be shamot, I think. It would be, or no, but shamot means let go. Means I think the whole point is, and that's what the Urayim says, is that the main commandment here is on the lender, not on the borrower. Okay? The lender can't demand the money that year, but the borrower still should pay back whenever he can. Okay. Okay, so I had to leave early. And that was Machin Bet. Okay. Are you saying that Shemitah Ksafim doesn't apply outside the land of Israel? Again, according to my explanation, Shemitah Ksafim would not apply at all to outside the land of Israel because it's linked to Shemitah Karka. Shemitah Karka for sure is only the land of Israel. And therefore, Shemitah Ksafim would only apply. Once we're saying that Shemitah Ksafim is because of Shemitah Karka, then if the Shemitah Karka is only in the land of Israel, then Shemitah Ksafim is only in the land of Israel. And that's what most poskim hold. But we're machmer that maybe it's outside again because it only depends on this explanation. But again, that's the halacha part. Halacha lemaisa we'll get to later in the year. And if you want more details, you have to read Rav Olber Rimon's things on that. I'm going to keep things at the biblical level for now. Okay. And who declares shemitah, the farmer or the court? Okay, that we have to see, or even God will say, who declares shemitah? It's a big machloket in Parshanim. He crushed Shemitah Hashem. Is that because God called out Shemitah, or because we called out Shemitah, or because the court called out Shemitah? Now, all those things we have to discuss. Okay, let go of the loan for the year. If it's forever, then you're right. That's why you'll discourage lending if it's forever, and that's why Yitila makes the prusable, because once you apply it forever. But if the original law was only to put out for a year, there'd be less need for a prusable. I agree with that. Can we come up with seven names? Okay, we'll talk about that later. Number seven. This should be the recording should be available. It's everything posted at the website. And okay, that's the source sheet over there for the link for the source sheet. And okay, I think Hans book the Talmud claims that the markets by being selling were open in the time of the judges, ancient biblical Israel and Shabbat. I'm not sure, but Sefer Ezra talks about that. That the courts that they were selling on Shabbat and Ezra complained about and closed them down. Okay. Shmuel Bet was chapter U, and he said it's chapter 9 of Shmuel Bet. And then, okay, option A. How do we get back to option A again? Something happened to the chat, okay? Okay, and I think that covers most of them. Okay, I just copied it again. Okay, I see what happened. So this, I have to end here. Our time is up also, and I have a plane to catch, as they say. Let me stop to share the screen. Anyway, so hopefully next week I'll be back in the land of Israel. During our Shemitah year, but luckily I'm not a farmer, so it doesn't apply in our land too much. But hopefully I'll have a better desk and everything. Okay, so have a good week, everybody, and welcome to Harvest Month of Torah in Motion. And thanks, Maxine, for running things.
And thank you so much for teaching in these unusual circumstances.
Okay, that's fine.
Excellent. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, bye bye.